Whether it's audiobooks or all-time greatest hits, long live listening to your favorites. Learn more about Kisqali Ribociclib 200 milligrams at KISQALI.com and talk to your doctor to see if Kisqali is right for you.
Sports Radio, FNZ Mac and Bone with you. Wishing everybody a happy NBA draft day. Hornets with two picks. Do we get a big? Do we get two rookies? Can we get a veteran and a rook tonight? That would be a beautiful haul. We'll talk about it a bunch here later this hour on the Mac Attack. We got some news and notes we got to hit you with in about 10 minutes or so, including some something that could leave the Hornets without Durant or Williams. That is called the freaking absolute worst case scenario. We will tell you about that intel coming up in a little bit. But right now, man, we can't let this show go by today without paying tribute to the amazing Burton Smith. Man, did he live a full life. He passed away yesterday at the age of 95. He's a NASCAR Hall of Famer. What did you say, Bone? He's in four total Hall of Fames? Three racing, one in business.
I mean, that's four more than we're in.
The man that ran Speedway Motorsports, the man that got the great Speedway Children's Charities movement going, the car dealerships. I mean, he just had an empire, man, and he was so influential to racing. We've got to have someone give perspective, Bone, to just what Burton Smith was like as a man, what it was like to work for, and just what he meant to the sport of racing. And there's no one better to do it than someone that's worked under him for years over there at the Speedway and for PRN. That is Doug Rice, and he joins us here on the Mac Attack. Doug, we appreciate you joining us, man.
Mac, T-Bone, thanks for having me on. It's a pleasure to come on and talk about Burton and what he contributed to the sport, his philanthropy, and you surmised that really well. He lived to be 95, and he lived a very full, productive life. I mean, that man worked up till the end, and that was his thing. He loved to work. You never heard him talking about vacations or trips to Hawaii. It was the next opportunity to work and to expand on what he had already created.
When you look at his contributions to motorsports, I mean, he and Humpy in the All-Star race, I mean, Bristol itself, like what's at the top of the list in terms of what he's responsible for?
Yeah, that's a good question. I look at the things that he brought as an innovator, yeah. And I know that's the word that's been tossed out a lot about Burton, innovator, visionary. But that's a big list, and a lot of them were centered at Charlotte Motor Speedway and carried over to other places. You mentioned the All-Star Race. Well, they were the first group. Burton had this idea to light the speedway, and people scoffed at that. You can't light a super speedway, a mile-and-a-half racetrack. Well, they did, and ran the first All-Star Race under the lights one hot night. Tremendous success. And then later on, you know, it became everyday occurrence to light super speedways. It was called a folly when Burton proposed the idea of the condos at Charlotte Motor Speedway. Yeah. Well, they took off, and if you bought them early, you made a nice tidy profit probably down the road when you sold it. And the Speedway Club at Charlotte, that was universally ridiculed. You can't have fine dining at a racetrack. Well, you know, 20-some years later, it's still there, and it set a pattern that forced other facilities to have to do these type of things. And those are some big lists. I know it's cliche to have your Mount Rushmores in whatever sport, but if there is a Mount Rushmore in NASCAR, and I'm not talking about the driver's side, I'm talking about the builders of the sport, Burton Smith's got to be on there.
Definitely. Also, Speedway Children's Charities as well, which is a massive thing that was under his watch as well. We're talking to Doug Rice, PRN, at RiceMan61 on Twitter. Doug, we talked about his impact on the sport that he had. What he had, the impact on you, though, personally, what was he like to work for?
He was an interesting man. I mean, it's nice in a lot of ways to work for somebody that's almost bigger than life. And I think that's a fair description of Burton. He walked in the room, and he commanded the attention, not because he said, look at me, but because you knew that at that time he was the decision maker. And a couple of little things popped into my head over the last day since I've been thinking about this. There was one time we were in Texas, and I think he had done a press conference, and he had talked about acquiring some land. And he also had a pretty sizable ranch down in Texas. And I asked him about buying land, and he goes, I don't want all the land. I just want all the land that touches mine. and later on that day I went, oh, no, he does want all the land.
Oh, I get that.
Yeah, I mean, that is such a brutal thing, you know, for him to say that, because that's the way he thought. He thought big, and, you know, and one other occasion he asked me to make something happen. And in my answer, I used the word no. And he just stopped me, and he goes, I don't know that word. I'm not familiar with what you just said. And I thought, and I went, you're right. The answer is we will get that fixed, and I'll come back to you with the proper answer. Meaning, I don't know what the word no means.
Yeah, but that's
those kind of things stick in your mind.
That's how you get people like him that get things done over and over again. That's how you get things done. But no's not an option. That's awesome. Doug, I want to ask you about one part of him, though, that I always found interesting, is that, like, he was a maverick, right? He was a rebel, and he was one of the few guys in the sport, I mean, there ain't many, that would stand up to the France family, you know? And there was a rivalry there, ISC and the France family, Speedway Motorsports, and NASCAR's got to hand out the races. But he was big enough to just stand there and, you know, and go toe-to-toe at times. What was his relationship like with the France families? And what can you tell us about kind of that maverick rebel personality, man? He wouldn't take anything, you know?
He relished that.
Yeah.
I don't want to overstate my place in line here, but I feel like in just observing Bruton, he enjoyed that role.
Yeah.
He enjoyed being a little bit of the iconoclast and the guy on the outside stirring it up. But, you know, that also sharpens the knife on the other side. That made the sport better. That tension between Bruton's interest and the interest of the France family made the whole sport better.
Yeah.
And helped it grow. And I know that sounds a little Pollyanna, but I do. I think if you had two people that all wanted to make it better but maybe differed on the way to make things better, I think that's good for everybody, and that's a winning proposition in my book. But yeah, there was a tension there, but it was respectful too. And I know for a fact that Bruton cared deeply for Brian France. He and Brian had a really nice relationship.
Doug, what was the dynamic like when Bruton and Humpy Wheeler were together in a room? Like, what was that vibe like between those two guys?
You know, I didn't have a lot of occasions that they were in the same place at the same time. But I do know this, you know, in my role up there, I emceed hundreds of events that Humpy would defer. You know, you make sure that Bruton gets the spotlight. He, even though Humpy was... of their lives, they were very, very close again. You know, there was a time
that
wasn't good, but I know for a fact that later in life, Humpy and Bruton were very tight again, and that makes me feel good.
No, that I was curious when Bone asked you the question. I'm like, oh man, did that end okay? You know, towards the end for Bruton,
yes,
and I'm
did.
Glad to hear
yes,
that.
Yes, it did.
That's good. That's very good. And you talk about,
I know what it's like to defer to the other guy here a lot,
Doug. Don't worry about that.
Watch yourself. But you talk about, Doug, a combination of two innovators and guys with outside the box ideas that can't be told no. What a tandem, man. You know, no doubt about it.
It certainly was. I mean, you had one that had the wherewithal and the ability and the capital to make things happen. You had this other creative force to take Bruton's visions and see them through to the end. So, and you know, and this area, the Charlotte area and Concord, Cabarrus County prospered from that, and indeed the whole sport did. You know, I had one other quick anecdote I wanted to share, if you don't mind. We were doing a race, I think it was in Kentucky, and it was one of those that got delayed. and it went late into the night. And we got through calling the race, and I'm packing up and I'm leaving, and my cell phone goes off. Bruton did not carry a cell phone, by the way.
Oh, God.
He was old school, you know. He had people that carried phones.
Yeah, yeah.
All right? And one of those people was Don Hawk. Don worked for Speedway Motorsports for probably 15 years. He's now the CEO of the SRX Racing Series. Don had been around the game a long time. And we're done. We're off the air. And my phone rings, and I see Don's number come up, and I'm going, okay, I know why he's calling, because he's calling to put Bruton on. Sure enough, he calls, and I answered, and I'm holding my breath, and he goes, Bruton wants to talk to you. And I'm thinking, what did I do? Where did I stumble on this? You know, what went wrong? And Bruton comes on and goes, you know, you made me sit in a parking lot for 10 minutes. And I'm like, oh, this is bad. And he said, I had to sit in the parking lot and listen to the last 15 laps of the race before I went into my hotel.
Oh, wow. Good. Well, man, I was worried.
I'm off the hook. I get to play another day.
Oh, the relief you must have felt, man. Oh, that's beautiful.
You cannot imagine how that was. But that was the kind of man he was. I mean, he didn't have to do that.
Yeah, no, that's cool. That's a cool gesture. All right, Doug, hey, you did it. We knew you would do it, that you would put this man into words and describe him beautifully, and we appreciate it, man. Thanks so much for coming on.
You know, I thank you for having me, and I will say this. It was an honor to work for somebody like Bruton Smith and to work for him and to work with him and for him. I feel like that's an honor I'll carry the rest of my life.
I bet, man.
Doug.
Thanks, Doug. We appreciate you, man. Thanks, that is Doug Rice from PRN. Worked up there at the Speedway for Bruton Smith for years. He's got good stories, good perspective on him. He's a legend. Dead at the age of 95, lived a full life. It's one you can celebrate. We saw a Ravens player, Bone, die at the age of 96, Jalen Ferguson, this week.
26.
Or 26,
yeah,
90.
Yeah.
What the hell am I talking about? That wouldn't
26,
be a
yeah, yeah.
That would be a full life. 26 years of age. You had Biggie Swanigan, former big man for Purdue, an NBA player, die at the age of 25. Even Tony Siragusa die at the age of 55. Those things, you know, feel differently than Bruton. It's like, man, that's a full life he lived.
Do you want to run through, Mac, in this last minute here, three or four NBA rumors?
Yeah, because I know some people are tuning in like, hey, what's the draft scuttlebutt, you know?
One right now, according to Legion Hoops, there's been a big swing in Vegas with the number one overall pick, that Banchero. Pablo Banchero now is the Vegas fave. Now, again, lying season, smoke screens, we don't know, but Banchero right now apparently trending towards number one.
So that means money's coming in out there on Banchero. Before that, it was Jabari, right?
Yes.
Not lanky old Chet.
Yep.
He's the third option in the
betting. So we'll see. A little drama there with number one. Mac, there's rumors last night that DeJounte Murray, the triple-double threat, the star player for the San Antonio Spurs, because they don't want to max him out, DeJounte Murray could be traded at some point to the Atlanta Hawks to play in the same backcourt as Trae Young.
That'd be a small backcourt, right? Murray's 6'4", right?
But yeah, but he's a defensive dynamo as well. But
he is, but he's 6'4". You got 6'4", and you got 4'2" in the same backcourt. Name an ice tray.
But it is two of the top three or four young point guards in the league in one backcourt.
That's interesting. I would not have thought that they would eye him to pair another point guard with Trae.
We had Jeremy Grant, Mac, for the Detroit Pistons, traded to the Blazers yesterday. There's a connection there, possibly, with Miles Bridges. Portland was linked to Bridges, but so are the Pistons. Now the Pistons, where Miles is from, opens up a lot of money to make an offer towards Miles.
They freed up $20 million of cap room with that deal, and now they have $42 million of cap room. But again, Miles is restricted, so even if Detroit offers him, we can match it. I also want to mention real quick, because I know we got to shut the heck up, Moni, the thing that Rafael Barlow had, the draft expert, he starts to hear intel that both Durant and Williams could be off the board in the top 10. Could be number 7 to Toronto and number 9
San Antonio.
To San Antonio. If neither one of them, because I'm comfortable with both, if neither one of them is there for us at 13, that is DEFCON, whatever is bad DEFCON. I always get confused. But that is a bad DEFCON.
What about Sohan at 13, though, if he's still there?
Then you'd have to take him, but he's not a center. That's the thing. Yeah. Those are the two legit centers, you know?
I need two big men. One in the draft, one vet. I need two big
men. That's what I'm saying. It should be, if it's a two big man night, we're all going
to
be happy.
We will continue to monitor throughout the show and all day here on 92.7 News, Rumors, stuff that pertains to the Hornets, just interesting stuff. Your home for draft and rumors all day. Sports Radio 92.7 FNZ. When we come back, it's not Footy Friday, it's Footy Thursday, but due to scheduling stuff, Jessica Charman, the analyst for Charlotte FC, joins Mac and Bone, 92.7 FNZ.
FNZ, Mac and Bone hanging with you here. It is NBA draft day coming up at 8:40. We begin 1 hour of straight draft, homies. All right, straight up draft talk for 1 hour straight, starting at 8:40 with the Hornets. As of now, picking 13th and 15th tonight. Right now, though, we got to do some shuffling. Got to do a little shuffling here, Bone. Our next guest is joining us on Thursday as opposed to Friday. But she is more than willing, Bone. After Mad Cat was angry at me for about 10 minutes, she was more than willing then to switch her day and do Footy Thursday instead of Footy Friday. We got to talk some Charlotte FC. Jessica Charman, radio analyst for Charlotte FC. What's up, Jess?
Hey, I just hope Brant Bronico knows how lucky he is that I'm so flexible, because, you know, I wanted the guy to shine. He's been shining on the pitch, and now it's time for him to shine on the radio.
This
did
is
you,
true.
Did you get a little bit of Mad Cat attitude towards Mac yesterday?
There may or may not have been a little passive aggressiveness in the message. Yes.
I love it, though. Jess is like one of the guys. Like, she'll just give you crap. If you ask her to move her time, she'll give you crap, and then she'll say yes.
We had to figure out who was going to tell her day got moved, and Mac, Mac won the pony.
So Footy Friday guest tomorrow is kind of Brant Bronico, one of the best players on this team. We moved Jess up. We basically wanted to balance it out. We wanted, you know, we didn't want two soccer guests. We're reacting to the draft. So Jess is working with
us.
Yeah,
I don't want to get in trouble with the other sports fans. I really don't. That text line can be rather vicious when it comes to soccer.
Okay. You know that. You know how it works. Jess, let's talk about this team. And got a big match against Montreal coming up this week. We'll talk about it. It's a revenge, you know, game, so to speak, for us. But let's recap last week. And you, when we had you on to talk to us about your great native land of England earlier in the week, I squeezed in a soccer question, and you kind of disagreed with me. I thought they got conservative at the end, and I was kind of upset with it. How about this? How do you evaluate the Latanzio era two matches in? Because you got to be thrilled with it, right?
I mean, you'd have taken 4 points over two matches when he first started with that new manager, with the changes that were being made. You know, being unbeaten is a very good thing, particularly with one of those matches on the road. I do think there are some questions about timings of substitutions, maybe waiting a little bit too long to make those adjustments. But at the same time, that shows he's trusting the players that are on the pitch to get the job done. He doesn't feel like he needs to stoop to his bench because his starting 11 are doing a decent job. I think that my biggest complaint about this weekend, last gone, was the fact that maybe our first half performance just wasn't good enough. I think we were a little conservative in the first half. We weren't able to have that link-up play to find opportunities like we did against the Red Bulls. But the substitutions made sense, because at the end of the day, I think we have to look at, were we comfortable in the 1-1 position? I don't think we were. I think it was looking like the Columbus Crew were the more likely to get a goal. So we had those reassuring substitutions. We tidied it up a little at the back. And there were some very scrappy moments of defending. And I think we really fought tooth and nail to hold on to that point in the end.
Jess, was it frustrating because they played for the point and really not to lose in a game where it seemed like they could win that game?
She's telling you no. She's telling you that we're wrong, Boney. That's what she's telling you. Right,
I'm
Jess? Is that what you want to tell us?
Being on the road... And so with it being on the road and with the fact we've only had 1 point, we shouldn't turn our noses up at it. I think that if we'd have had a better first half performance, I'd have been more frustrated. But at halftime, I was pretty concerned with how we were playing. We weren't finding the clean passes. We weren't connecting. And I thought we made Columbus look better than they were. After 45 minutes, if you're in a position where you've conceded an awful goal and you're 1-0 down, to come away at 1-1 at the end, that's an improvement from the first half.
See, I think Friday Jess would agree with us.
No, because I tried Monday Jess and Thursday Jess, and she shot down the theory.
Friday Jess is very special. Friday Jess is ready for the game the next day.
Very upbeat, very ready to go. We will talk about the Montreal game on Saturday night as we try to do more work on the road. I will say this, even though I got, I complained a little bit about how safe we were, and Latanzio literally said, I don't want to lose. If I can't win the game, I'm not going to lose the game. In fairness to him, he matched Miguel's road point total in one match as compared to seven. It has to be said. Jess, I want to ask you about a couple of the positional battles that are going on now, right? Because we had a feeling with Latanzio taking over, there would be guys that maybe he favored and didn't think we're getting a fair shake with Miguel, or that he liked more than Miguel, or whatever it was, right? So there's two situations. One is Anton Walkes has been so good next to Carujo at the back. I can't believe I'm saying this, but like, should he start and should Fuchs not start? Or should Fuchs go to left back? But then again, Moore has been great under Latanzio. And then the other situation is the wingers. I don't mean to seem ungrateful, Jess. We're playing great with Latanzio, but are we going to see Joswiak and Vargas at all? What do you think of those, positional battles?
Yeah, I think it's really interesting that you mentioned that. You've also got the battle between Harrison Orphal and Jalen Lindsay. Yeah. There's a lot of competition in this squad. There's a lot of depth in certain positions. The Anton Walkes one is a really tough one for me. I want to have the loyalty to my English man. I think he's done really well in there. He's slotted in. He's brought a different level of confidence and communication to the back line. I think it's really difficult to drop him at this point. It definitely wouldn't be performance-based if you did. When you look at Christian Fuchs, he is of the older age in soccer, and he's coming off of an injury. So is he 90 minutes match fit right now after only just rejoining practice? I don't know. But from my perspective, I would keep Anton Walkes in for at least another game, because you don't want to have to make changes to your back line within a match if you don't have to, because that's where you really want to have consistency. In terms of the wingers, again, it's a tough one, because McKenzie Gaines had a quieter night against Columbus, but I don't know if that was more to do with his performance or to do with the fact of the lack of service to him. It's difficult, because against the Red Bulls, I thought he had his best performance of the season. Lacks that final distribution with the cross a little bit, but it's something, if he can nail that down in his game, he's going to be a top-level player in MLS. But you've paid the big bucks for Joswiak. Kerwin Vargas has shown flashes of what we know he can do with that exciting Colombian, twist of energy. You've got to start seeing them come in. And I like to see wingers being substituted halfway through, an hour into a game, because your defense is already tired of the opposition. Bring on those fresh legs. Yeah. Let them run at them. So right now, I think those players on the bench are going to be wondering what they have to do to step onto the pitch. And I'm hoping that is a motivating factor for them, that they're grinding harder in practice and trying to prove Latanzio that they deserve minutes.
We're talking to Charlotte FC radio analyst Jessica Charman on Sports Radio 92.7 FNZ. Jess, how do you break down this revenge game this weekend on the road at Montreal? Did it go well last time? How do you see this playing out this weekend?
Well, what's funny is we gave Montreal their first clean sheet and their only clean sheet of the entire MLS season. We're the only team that hasn't been able to score against them in MLS action when we faced them at Bank of America Stadium. That's one of the games I look back at and I'm most frustrated remembering, because I think it was one of the matches where we didn't show anything that Charlotte Football Club can do. We adjusted too much for them.
Scared.
We showed too much respect to them. We played scared, exactly. I think I said they just didn't look like we wanted it. So I'm really hoping we change that attitude going into Canada this weekend. I will say that they had a very tough night at the office last night. Montreal lost 4-0 against Toronto in the Canadian Championship. That can work two ways. They did play a weakened side, but at the end of the day, when you have a rivalry, imagine losing 4-0 to Atlanta. You would be feeling frustrated. You would be feeling rather embarrassed, probably. And so they're going to come into this one really wanting to kind of make up for the fact that they disappointed their fans. They got knocked out in the semifinals. So I think we're going to face a very passionate Montreal side. But if we can get in their heads early on, if we can score an early goal, they might have that self-fulfilling prophecy of, here we go again. We're leaking goals. We're conceding goals. So I don't want to say it, because every time I say that we're going to pick up our first road win, we don't. But I'm hoping we can at least come away with some points.
Yeah, your curse is dangerous.
The Jess curse. Yeah, Jess, by the way, our relationship is still, you know, in the first year, right? You're still a rookie on the Mac attack. I notice a lot of little shots you'll make here or there on the Mac curse, Jess. A lot of shots. You're already fearing the Mac curse. You haven't even been here for a full season yet.
Listen, I've been talking to the fans, and they say once you spend a little too long with Mac, it starts to come across like you have mitosis across into my system. So I'm scared that maybe it'll rub off on me a little bit too much.
Oh, trust me. I'm an example of that.
Yeah, look at Bone's life. Look what's happening to Bone.
Jess and I have an agreement for this football season when she's around town for the Panthers games. We're going to Americanize Jess to this version of football. We're going to take Jess around to the tailgates and have her get Americanized with this football.
There you go.
And I'm going to be any challenge. I want to see what, you know, like how they've got like kick up challenges with soccer. I want to take on all the American football challenges.
She wants to throw footballs.
I want to see Jess throwing. I want to see Jess catching a football, running patterns. I mean, there's just
through the combine. I'll do it.
Oh, you want WFNZ combine for Jess to get her going on the other version of football? All right, Jess. Hey, enjoy the match on Saturday, man. I want to get revenge against Montreal and get a win. By the way, 7 o'clock airtime, 7:30 first kick?
I think so. That's when I'm getting there.
Okay.
I hope so.
Well, then nothing else matters then, if that's the case. All right, Jess, we'll talk to you next week.
Hey, and shout out to Willie P. Style, who has the best picture on T-Bone's Twitter. Everyone needs to look at Skinny Willie.
All right, Jess, be good. That sounded funny in her accent, Skinny Willie.
To clarify, Willie P. has posted on Twitter, and you can check it out at T-Bone WFNZ. Today, apparently, is the 11-year anniversary of the time Willie P. hung out with iconic band Good Charlotte.
Oh, that is an iconic band and iconic man together. What a moment that was. That's amazing.
When we come back, we talk Hornets draft, and what's the best plan of attack for tonight when it comes to 13 and 15? Use both. Trade one. What do you want the Hornets to do tonight on draft night? It's Mac and Bone on Sports Radio 92.7 FNZ. Good Charlotte Radio.
Sports Radio FNZ. Mac and Bone hanging out with you here on a Thursday morning edition of show, NBA draft day. We got to talk Hornets. We got to do it for the next hour straight. Jerry V will be involved at 9 o'clock. At 9:20, we're going to give you sounds of the draft. What have analysts on this station and elsewhere been saying about the Hornets draft and the prospects the Hornets are considering? So we've got all that going on right now. We want to talk through this. We're going to talk through it with the fans. Definitely hit us up on that Garage Door Guru text line, 704-570-9610. And I would put the question this way, Bone. What would make you happy tonight, Hornets fans? Is this a draft? What can they do tonight to fire the fans up? We were just talking off the air, Bone, about, you know, doing a segment tomorrow where we open up the phones. We did it last year where we open up the phones and we, you know, let the fans go off. Like, are you happy? What do you like? What do you not like about the draft? What do you think, Bone, the Hornets can do tonight to have fans tomorrow where they're calling up and they're positive and they're fired up? What can they do?
I think a big man will achieve that, right? I don't know if it's the same level of getting the left tackle for the Panthers that we just saw in April, but the search for a rim protecting or rim running, whatever big we get, getting a young big in place, Mac, that is more of a, this is not to say they didn't draft Kai Jones, but more of a, if you draft Mark Williams, Mac, you get the sense that he will be a rotational piece off the bat. Maybe
more
not starting,
ready to play right away.
But he's going to at least be a backup and get minutes in there based off 2 years in college, his experience. If they get Mark Williams, Jalen Duren, if they get a big right there and that's all they get, I'm happy. If they get Miles Turner in one of those two guys, and they were able to move Gordon Hayward off of that deal, that to me would be the best thing that could happen would be Miles Turner, Mark Williams, away we go. Gordon Hayward's gone. If they do that tonight, I'm going to tell you right now, I might be naked tomorrow on the show.
And you know what? I wouldn't even be mad at you for it. I would be so happy tomorrow, I wouldn't even care.
Thank you.
You came in here naked. Wouldn't even care one bit.
I would wear boxer briefs.
I tend to agree. Like, that's what would make me the most excited.
Now, is that feasible? We'll see, but it, you know, it's not crazy.
I mean, I don't know if I bet, you know, my house that it's going to all occur that way. Like I said, there is some intel that, hey, could Toronto and San Antonio take Duren and Williams and screw us? That scares me a little bit. But again, it's lying season. We don't know what to believe. We do know from multiple sources that the Hornets and the Pacers are talking for the 4 zillionth time about Miles Turner. And I quoted John Hollinger last hour, you know, longtime NBA media member. Heck, he's been in the front office in Memphis. And he said, I know this is the 36th time this has been going on between Charlotte and Indiana over Miles Turner, but he said he feels like this is more serious. So that kind of makes me think maybe it's possible. Turner's at the point where he has 1 year left on the deal.
And that makes it very appealing as well.
So for Indiana, is it to the point where they're like, let's get something for him now? They are said to be interested in either 13 or 15. And I'd be willing to give up either one of them to get Miles Turner.
Moose says we don't need two bigs. I disagree. If you got...
Some people are saying that, I noticed.
But here's my thing, though. If you got two bigs and you were able to move off of Gordon Hayward, you accept getting two bigs and one of them on a 1 year, and then you've got a plan in place of, hey, maybe Miles gets injured because he does get injured a lot, or he doesn't play up to what you like, or he plays... Maybe he prices himself out. We don't know. But if you draft a big behind him, you've got a plan in place where you won't have to go pay Miles Turner, or you can get rid of him.
Yeah, you got some flexibility there. You're not acquiring a guy that's got 4 years left on his deal, 3 years left on his deal. So to me, best case scenario for me, Miles Turner balls out and we're able to sign him. But what if Mark Williams has an amazing rookie year as a backup to Miles Turner? And you start thinking, we can save some cap money there. Use it elsewhere. You know, maybe Mark Williams is ready to start. Maybe we hold on to Kai Jones. He's ready to back up Mark Williams. It gives you options, right?
It gives you multiple assets, multiple options. I'm not saying Mark Williams is Embiid or the elite bigs of the game, but why can't Mark Williams over time become Robert Williams? Why can't he become a guy like that? That may not be an all-star, but certainly a guy that saw how hard that guy played in the finals.
Mark Williams himself compared his game to Robert Williams' game.
There you go.
Yeah. If he can have that impact, give me that. That's what we need at center. That kind of energy on the offensive glass, which Mark Williams does. And by the way, Duren does it too.
Robert Williams averaged 10, and 2.2 blocks per game in the regular season.
You that's get huge that. Impact.
That's a win.
And the style too is nice. Like, do you not want Duren? I noticed multiple people now are saying Duren is better than Mark Williams. Are you upset if we get Jalen Duren?
No.
And Miles Turner?
No, there's upside there as well. I kind of lean more Mark Williams over Duren, but I'm not, if they got Miles Turner and Duren, no, I'm not mad about that. And then also, if you did get two new bigs, it's not a knock on Kai Jones, but then there's an asset there that you could get other stuff for Kai Jones.
Yeah. Mac and Bone with you. It's draft day. I honestly want to know, like, what can the Hornets do tonight to knock it out of the park to where tomorrow your text and when we do the call segment tomorrow, like, you guys are fired up and excited. There's nothing better in this town being on the radio to me than when we're all excited about something. And sometimes in Charlotte sports, that doesn't happen.
It happened once.
We felt it once or twice. Here's my other question, too. And by the way, I would take Duren, too, in a heartbeat. I've been watching more and more videos of him. The way he runs the floor at his size is unfreaking believable. I've been watching videos of him, Bone, get out on a fast break and finish. Holy crap, this dude. And the way he finishes lobs, like, he's more freakishly athletic than Mark Williams is. But Mark Williams is longer.
Yep.
He's bigger. He's got the standing reach of 9'9". I mean, it's ridiculous. Mark Williams, to me, brings you more defense. But Duren brings you some upside. So either one I'm happy with.
I don't think you're coming in upset if they got Mark Williams or another guy that runs the floor, 18 years old, 6'11", 250.
I think we should be happy with either one of those guys.
Now, do you think Duren does he have more of a Kai Jones path for next year? Is he a guy that steps in, or is he going to – Mark Williams feels like he might be the guy that people want more because I think they view him as
– more ready to play.
Step right in. Duren might be a guy that
– I think he's more ready to play. I do think there's some raw in Duren. You know, Duren reclassified.
Yep.
So this year should have been his first year in college. So there is an element of raw there with him, no doubt.
He went to Memphis on August 6th last year. So he went up to the deadline.
Mac and Bone, what would make you happy in this draft – I'm noticing people are saying trade up for Shaedon Sharpe. That's another rumor that was out there, multiple sources, saying that the Hornets are kind of eyeing Shaedon Sharpe. This is a upside, kind of patient, yet swing for the fences move. I would not be mad about it. I think my first plan is the one you talked about. Can we get Miles Turner and a young big and just really like throw all our assets at that center position? I know what they're going for if they trade up and are able to get Shaedon Sharpe, because what Jay Billis yesterday on this show said that if Shaedon Sharpe, he also reclassified last year. Now, the weird thing is he reclassified, came out of high school a year early, and then didn't play at Kentucky, which is very odd. Yep. But he was the number one recruit, according to Bean Carty and ESPN, in that class. And Jay Billis said yesterday, Bone, and he's a shooting guard, by the way, 6'4", athletic, and has range. And defense, he plays defense too. Jay Billis said if he came out of the draft in 2023, he would be the first pick in the draft, most likely. So, like, I couldn't be, like, would you be mad if they did the Shaedon Sharpe thing? That's not a right now move, though, as much as it's a, right?
That's a pair him with LaMelo down the line
down the road
and let those two guys just start cooking together.
Would you be mad about that?
No, not at all. I would be mad if they went, like, you know, two picks and A.J. Griffin and Branham from Ohio, or Easton and Branham, like 13 and 15, where just kind of just didn't really, just kind of got guys that are all right, could be good. I kind of want to get a guy that can be really good or, you know, trade. So just picking 13 and 15 and settling for the two picks would be kind of like, what are we doing here? Mac, by the way, Eric Bossy, the national basketball director for 24/7 Sports last year, had a comparison for Jalen Duren. There's a Bam Adebayo level to his game of handles, of shot blocking, of he's got. Remember Bam at Kentucky, Mac? We were like, whoa, we didn't really understand that this guy had the ability to handle and go up and down the floor. There's a Bam Adebayo level to Duren's game that is there.
Pass him. There's some passing,
yes,
too.
Yes.
I was watching the highlight clips of him last night. There's some passes for a big man, too, out of the post and stuff like that. I'm telling you, his upside is bigger than Williams, but he's not as ready to go. And I think here in Charlotte, I think we're getting a little tired of the upside. But again, we've got to remind ourselves how young LaMelo is, right? If they get, whether they get Sharpe or Duren and they're a great running mate for LaMelo in 3 years, at that point, LaMelo's what, 24? Yeah. Like, it's, we got to remind ourselves how young the franchise cornerstone is. A lot of people saying if we don't come out of tonight with a veteran, they're ticked off. It would be a buzzkill. Now, what players would you absolutely not want in the draft? I have to tell you, Bone, I like Tari Eason. I've been watching a lot of Tari Eason lately. He is so unbelievable defensively. He is similar to Sohan in that he could guard any position. Switches. I mean, I watch him guard guards and lock them down. They can't go anywhere off the dribble. But he's also got some offensive game. He gets out on a fast break and just takes it himself, finishes ridiculous acrobatic dunks. He's an athlete. He shot 37% from three. Like, I view Tari Eason as a guy that might be able to be a P.J. Washington replacement eventually. I'm kind of getting into him a little bit.
I never said I didn't like his game. I just meant if they just settle for, like, him and somebody else at 13 and 15, then, yeah, it's all right, but it's not the favorite thing I want them to do. Can I also point out one more thing on Mark Williams? Because he played 2 years in college, he's only 20 still. He's only 20. He's 20.
Yeah.
He turns 21 in December, so I know because guys play college basketball, they seem like they're all. He's only 20.
He's still a pup.
So there's a lot of room to grow there, too.
The two guys that I would really not like as picks are, you mentioned Griffin.
I don't want him either.
I just think he's limited off the bounce.
I thought Griffin could use a little more. I know that
a little more seasoning.
It was never going to happen because he got projected top 10. I thought A.J. Griffin from Duke could use a little more college. Like next year, I thought he would be
I don't disagree with that. I also don't want Ochai Agbaji. I think Ochai Agbaji's a nice role player in this league. I don't think there's going to be anything special. Maybe shooting. Maybe I shouldn't say. I think defensively he'll be good. I don't think he's as good as Sohan or Eason. Different position defensively, but I don't think he's as good as those guys. I don't think there's a lot of huge upside with Agbaji. Like, I don't think he was a big driver even at the college level. So, Agbaji would kind of be like, to me if we picked him.
Walker Kessler would be a terrible pick. That's Frank Kaminsky all over.
What if they are out? What if Duren and Williams off the board, like Rafael Barlow, the draft guy, said is possible, and we take Walker Kessler as our big? Carolina fans are not gonna want the team up with that cat again, are they?
So that's probably what's gonna happen there.
He's just such a big old oafy guy. Like, how's he moving and picking rolls and stuff like that?
He's
man?
Gonna get carved up yeah. in the pick and roll, man.
Oh, jeez.
Mac, I want you to address a emerging fan base on the text line during the break that I see often right now. That's the JT Thor fan club. Will you please go address those guys?
I know. I want to see his new movie. I know there's a new JT Thor movie out there, Bones. I'd like to check that out.
What the hell?
I think he's got some upside. I don't know if I would be like, you can't draft a player because of him, though. You know what I mean?
I had
like, just throw them all in there. Let's see who wins. Who gets the time?
I had a person tell me during my time off that Borrego got removed because he didn't play JT Thor enough. And I was like, what?
He got hit by the hammer of Thor is what happened to James Borrego. All right, next up, man, enough of us, enough of y'all. We're talking this out as fans. Let's talk to a certified basketball guru. Jerry V, what does he think the Hornets should do tonight? It's coming up next. Sports Radio 92.7 FNZ.